It's Tony Mack and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want. Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Good morning, everybody. That's right, Tony Mack and the Triplett. Not canceled yet, Aaron.
We're still here.
Not canceled yet. So that's good. We got a lot to talk about today, guys. We're number one, I feel a lot better about this week's show already because, one, I just feel better. Last week, I mentioned a couple times that I didn't feel very good. I went home last week, Aaron. I walked straight upstairs, which was probably around 12:20 in the afternoon, and I slept till almost 7 o'clock. And I'm not ashamed because it was fantastic. I needed it. I was exhausted, and I didn't feel good. I feel so much better today, and I'm so ready to tackle everything we're going to get into. Number one, I know you have a heck of a drive every Saturday to get here. How was it, man? How are you doing?
Yeah, it is a bit of a drive, but we've done this for now. This is going on our third year to work together to bring this show to you guys. And each year we've made it a little bit better. The first year we were about 3.5 hours apart, so we adjusted. we did video chat over Skype, and we had so many internet issues it would cut out. But thanks to Antonio, we were able to cut the little kind of mesh everything together to make it tolerable. We are recording over Audacity, I think. Is that what we were using?
Yep. The first year was Audacity.
To get it up. And then last year was a little better because you got the job here at the radio station. And you were able to call me. And it was like I was on the phone the entire time. But at least there was no internet issues.
Right. And the quality was better because I was recording it in the ZYP studio. And your quality still sounded like a phone call, but it was better than recording over Skype. And then Now, year three, we're both live in the studio.
Yeah. Now, because I moved back home, graduated from college, got a job. So I'm only about 1 hour and 20 minutes away. So once a week, make the trek over here. And it's definitely worth it for sure.
Everybody, a lot of people that listen to this show listen to Tom Abraham's show. So they know me. They know I'm engaged. And, they know what I'm getting ready to do in my life. A lot of people don't know that you're recently married back in late June. I was a part of that. You'll be a part of my wedding. I was a part of your wedding. You're about to be a homeowner, which is
hopefully
fantastic.
So if everything goes well.
And before we get into what we're going to talk about, some of the things we got coming to the show for football season, go ahead and tell everybody the big news. We haven't broken it yet. Your new job and such.
Yeah, I've got a new job at a school system as a tennis coach, which was really what I wanted to do. That's all I've wanted to do ever since I got into college was because coaches in college had a big impact on my life, and so that's what I wanted to do with my favorite sport, which is tennis. Because I played in college, played at Gadsden State in Huntington, in Montgomery. But and that kind of leads right into something that we missed last week. If you looked at our Tony Mack and the Triplett Twitter, I tweeted out my team shirt of the week, and this week's team shirt is my Huntington Hawks tennis uniform from my last year. So Hawk'em, as people from Huntington would say. Last week we forgot to mention it, but I did tweet it out, but we didn't mention it. My first team shirt, of course, was an Auburn Tigers shirt, as you might have expected. It's a good way to kick it off. But you jumped on the team shirt bandwagon today, I see.
Yeah, well, almost every day, and I never really think about it when I'm around you because you have a lot more team shirts than I do. Almost every single day when I come to work here, I'm wearing some sports-related shirt. And our boss, Arky, he mentioned to me one time before me and you got this show, he was like, "Do you ever wear anything that's not sports-related?" And in my head, I'm like, well, you should meet my friend Aaron. But, yeah, that's what we're going to start doing. Aaron, every single week, is going to wear a sports-related T-shirt. And he's going to tweet out a picture, and that jumps into the bigger picture. And that's one of the things we have that's going to be a lot of fun. Something to look forward to is Aaron's Shirt of the Week. A couple other things we're going to bring to you. We can't bring them to you quite yet because they're just related to the football season, but we're going to bring a segment that we brought to our podcast last year. It's called Headlines. We usually try to make that fun. Usually last year it was a recap of what had just happened because we did the podcast in the middle of the week. It was perfect to preview what was coming and to talk about what happened the week before. This year, it's all going to be about what we will expect and the biggest storylines going into the week, but we'll put our twists on to make them fun, make them funny, and you know, kind of put our own spin and opinion on them. And something else we're going to do that I know Arky's just going to love this. Every Saturday, we're going to bring you our crying Jordan face of the week. Aaron and I, it's basically, I guess, like a not top 10. We're not going to give you a not top 10 play, but we're going to take somebody who's just, I guess, an idiot, whether it be a coach or whoever it was this week who called Nick Saban overrated, something like that, and they'll be our crying Jordan face of the week. We'll try to tweet that out for you as well. We cover it all? I think we got it all. You ready to get into this thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's jump in first. Now, today, Aaron and I, we're going to talk about a lot of things that have happened this past week. Ezekiel Elliott's probably going to be the first thing we're about to jump into. We're going to talk about that. We got some preseason football to get into, who's looking good, who's not. It's mainly just some of the guys that have really caught my eye as far as looking good. I haven't gotten to sit down and watch a whole preseason game, just caught the highlights. So it's probably going to be guys who look good on that end. And we're going to give you our overrated and underrated coaches. I don't know if you guys heard. I'm sure you have. But there was a poll taken. It turned out to be a very small amount of coaches, but anonymous coaches gave out some their overrated and underrated college football coaches. And that list was really interesting, so we kind of put together one. It's not an official list, just some guys off the top of our head we gathered some information about that maybe gets talked about too much or doesn't get talked about at all that probably should. So we're going to have that for you coming up soon. But first, Aaron, you're a Dallas fan. If someone held a gun to your head and told you to pick an NFL team, you're going to go with the Dallas Cowboys. You've always liked them. I grew up liking the Cowboys. My stepdad's from Oklahoma. He lived in Dallas for a little while, and he's been a Cowboys fan as long as I've been alive. So what was your initial thought? Ezekiel Elliott suspended 6 games for his involvement in a domestic violence case that happened last summer. Obviously hasn't kept himself out of the headlines since then and made himself look like a model citizen. What do you think? Too harsh? Does he deserve a suspension at all? What do you think?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that Ezekiel Elliott has done himself no favors in the eyes of the media with some of his antics and immaturity. But that being said, I think that this was absolutely ridiculous because the prosecutor who has come out and he has said he felt that there was not enough evidence that it was going to be worth pressing charges. There was no charges pressed. They were all dropped. He was only accused. And it was basically just allegations and all speculation. There was no witnesses at all that could have said otherwise. So basically what the NFL did was, they took these allegations and thought, and they would said, we're going to make up for all the mistakes that we've made, and we're going to take it out on one of the biggest names on the biggest name team in the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys, to try to set things to make it look right. And the NFL, because everything in the NFL has just become arbitrary. They messed up. They completely messed up with Tom Brady's suspension. That was absolutely absurd. It was absurd what they did with Josh Brown and the way they just totally butchered the Josh Brown situation, suspended him 1 game, and the guy physically and emotionally admitted to physically and emotionally abusing his wife, and they suspended him 1 game, and they totally mishandled that situation. So now they're just it's the NFL has no idea what they're doing when it comes to any kind of disciplinary action or anything like that. I think that it's time for some kind of change in the NFL when it comes to front office executives and things like that, because this was absurd. I mean, I understand that you have to take some course of action, but really it's just it's all speculation. There's no evidence. There was nothing. They were just going off of, we have to make ourselves look better because of how we've messed up. And it didn't. They were going to look bad either way because of how bad they've handled this situation in general. They handled this whole situation. They've been looking at this for like a year. And whatever they said, whether it was a suspension for a few games or not no suspension at all, they were going to look bad because of the way they handled it. They handled it so pitifully. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. The way not only they handled this, but the way they've handled everything recently is ridiculous.
Well, I'm going to be on the other side of the fence here. I think they got it right. I absolutely think they got this thing right. Not saying that their punishments are that great. They, like you mentioned, they've handled so many different situations vastly, you know, on total different sides of the spectrum. Tom Brady gets suspended 4 games. Finally, that stuck. He finally just said, screw it, I'll serve the suspension for Deflategate. And like you mentioned, Josh Brown, or whatever, I'm sorry, wasn't really.
It was Josh Brown.
It was Josh Brown,
for
yeah.
The Giants.
Yeah, that's right, Josh Brown. He got 1 game or whatever, so.
After admitting to his what he had done.
So, a lot of people think, and we talked about this yesterday, a lot of people think that there needs to be like a set deal. Like the NFL needs to come out and say this is the black and white policy, which that's really hard to do, as you can tell, because domestic violence, as much as we want to say it's black and white, like, well, it's domestic violence, period, this is what you get. They're going to try to make it, stretch it out and make it sound differently, no matter the case. But in this case, the NFL conducted their own investigation. It has nothing to do with what's going on with the actual charges in the court for Ezekiel Elliott. The NFL did their own investigation, and according to the NFL, they found, let me find exactly how they put it, they found substantial and persuasive evidence supporting a finding that Elliott engaged in physical violence against Ms. Thompson on multiple occasions. And from what I heard, there were reports that a couple times after she left, I'm trying to put this the way I just had it in my head. It's early. It was a long night. But there were multiple times she was seen with Elliot. She was known to be with Elliot. And after leaving those situations, she'd walked away with substantial, you know, and physical bruises and abrasions to her body, to her hands, her arms, or wherever have you. So they feel like they found something. And if they do, I like the fact that they went at it for 6 games right away. And I don't think the reason why I like that, I don't think that 6-game suspension is going to stick. It's probably going to get knocked down to 4, which is where it absolutely belongs. But that's them saying they don't care if this is the biggest star or whatever. I think this is their way of finally trying to make things right. They're putting the Josh Brown thing in the rear view, and they're starting with Ezekiel Elliott now and saying this is the penalty, like we've been wanting to do for a while on domestic violence. This is it. And they've already threatened him with this. If you do it again, you face banishment. There is a very good possibility. We don't care how big of a star you are. There is a very big possibility you face banishment. And the other reason I like this is he knows he's being investigated by the NFL for domestic violence. And for a year, he has done nothing to help himself. Nothing to help himself get out of this. He's pulling down girls' shirts in public and exposing them in public. Yeah, a guy who supposedly respects women is out there and trying to prove that he didn't do anything to a woman is blatantly showing his disrespect for a woman in a public place by pulling her shirt down. And you're not going to convince me otherwise that bar thing he just got into a couple months ago wasn't a cover-up. There's no way they're not covering that up. People that were at that bar saw what happened. They know Ezekiel Elliott did it. The good thing for Dallas and the good thing for Ezekiel Elliott, it happened in Dallas, and they've got the money to put that away. Those guys, the people that it happened to, are probably like the Cowboys, either that or they like Jerry Jones' money, and they gave him enough money to say, well, yeah, it wasn't Zeke, or just to cover it up. So he's not doing right. Lucky for them, they got away with a situation that happened because they've got money. He's not getting away with this one. And I'm okay with that, because now maybe he can straighten his act up, because he's been nothing but a nuisance since he's gotten famous for his Ohio State venture, which he was also a baby.
And I'm not condoning any of his actions whatsoever. Like I said, he hasn't done anything to help himself during this entire process. I think where my frustration comes in is just the inconsistency of the league itself.
And I understand that.
It's ridiculous. You have to have some sort of, and it's all because it all goes back to that Ray Rice situation, how poorly and how pitifully that was handled. And now, ever since they handled that so pitifully, so poorly, that they handled it so bad.
I lost my train of thought.
No, you're okay. I understand what you're saying. And another problem that they're going to have
I found where I was at.
Go ahead.
It was so bad that
another problem that they're going to have, and that they're experiencing right now, and it's going to continue. And the reason why they need to figure out this domestic violence thing now is they're suspending people and threatening banishment on NFL players for domestic violence. What about the players who, you know, hit women in college? You know, do they not? I know they might have faced punishment in the NCAA, but what's that rule coming into the NFL? Joe Mixon, his video is out, and people don't think he got the right punishment at Oklahoma. He's in the NFL. He's not going to face any kind of suspension or fine or anything from the NFL. And that what technically, from what I understand, that wasn't his first warning. So if he does it again, which a lot of people won't like, the NFL policy might not be banishment. It might be that 4-game to 6-game suspension that Zeke's getting. Also, somebody else we're going to have to be talking about soon, the FAU quarterback. His name escapes me right now, but he was the Florida State guy, you know, who hit that girl at a bar. You know what I mean? You got guys in college who are doing these things, and they're coming in the NFL with no punishment and no warnings. And I don't care what they got away with in college. They're still playing football. So is the NFL going to crack down on that for guys coming into the NFL already having this kind of background? You know what I mean? Like, is that instance in college, is that your warning? So if you mess up again in the NFL, is it automatic banishment? You know what I mean? So they've got to figure this thing out really fast, because it's a sad thing to say that this is happening more and more all over the league, and that one of the worst owners that, at handling this thing has to be Jerry Jones, and I understand the players love him, but I would love him too, because you could basically get away with murder, and he would say you didn't do it, because you know you've got him taking up for Ezekiel Elliott, which it's not credible. You can't say, well, listen to Jerry Jones and what he's saying. You know, he's a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. This is a guy who called Greg Hardy a leader. He called Greg Hardy a leader. And Greg Hardy wasn't even cut from that team for what he did to his girlfriend. He was cut from the team because he was hard to deal with. Really? The guy who had supposedly threatened his girlfriend with a bed full of guns? You can't really control that guy? You can't get him to do what you say? You don't say. You got to be kidding me. Jerry Jones, he's in the Hall of Fame. Cool. He's had some good teams and good coaches. Cool. I can't wait for him to go away.
Where I was going earlier that I kept losing my train of thought is it's become that where the NFL has handled things so poorly, from Ray Rice. I totally forgot about the Greg Hardy situation. They handled that terribly too. That was terrible. But handled that awfully. They handled Josh Brown pitifully. They've handled it so bad to now it's gotten to where, in my opinion, at least from the outside looking in, this with Ezekiel Elliott is – just allegations, and the other ones were more absolutely 100% confirmed.
Yeah.
And that's me being in defense of, you know, this is my favorite team and this guy's really important. And I'm not condoning anything, but I'm saying that there was no charges. There's nothing proven. Nobody admitted to anything here. But the fact that
you keep saying they handled this
so bad that now it's going to turn into not just with him, but with everybody else down the road, that allegations are going to be enough to get you in trouble.
You keep saying there was nothing proven, and I don't think after a year-long investigation that the NFL conducted themselves, they're suspending him 6 games for allegations. They said they found substantial and persuasive evidence that he did this.
I'm just saying that by what the prosecutor had said, by saying
the NFL investigation and that kind of investigation are totally different.
The NFL
can do a lot more and come away with a lot more. The legal system is very precise, and there's a lot of loopholes in what you can and cannot use for evidence that the NFL can use for evidence. The NFL can go out and get these text messages and pictures and use them. There's no circumstance. It's not circumstantial evidence. There's not some you can use and can't use because of this and that, like it is in the court. In the NFL, it's, oh, you have texts, you have pictures? Cool, we're using that. That is evidence for the NFL. So that's how they can get a better investigation than the court system can, because there's a lot of loopholes and jumping through hoops in that system. In the NFL, there's not. They just go out and get the job done.
And now with this, I think that lining up with Elliott and Brown and Hardy and Rice and whatever comes forward, whatever discipline action is taken on the next person, if it's not 6 games and it's something else, then that then the NFL should totally redo the way that they think. I think that the next thing that happens, it has to be now. If you're going to start this way, it has to stay this way from now on because of the way that it's that they've handled it. And this is not just for this domestic violence. This is for any kind of issue that we have in the NFL, whether it's, you know, deflating balls or hits above the head or whatever they're trying to find people for. Nothing is consistent. There's no consistency, and everything in the NFL is arbitrary.
And don't forget about the substance abuse policies, smoking weed and all that stuff. You get that's more of a black and white thing. That's why people are getting so upset is they have a set punishment for, you know, repeat offenders of marijuana use and stuff like that. And it's far greater than it's almost the equivalent of what they're suspending people for. Domestic violence.
Martavis Bryant got a season-long suspension last year,
and he was just reinstated into the preseason like yesterday.
Josh Gordon is never going to get back into the NFL
smoked a little weed,
and the NFL. I mean, I know that it's legal in several states now, and to recreationally smoke it. You can believe what you want to about that, but the NFL obviously has their own policy and how they feel that should be handled. But
there's your reason right there for the all of a sudden the foot on the throat kind of style of punishment for these domestic violence cases, because they have to look at well, we've kind of put ourselves in a bind because we're so strict on the marijuana policies, but obviously domestic violence is far worse. So, but we have to have a punishment that's worse. Yeah, I mean, you have to. And I think it's very unfortunate that it's going to be that rough because of the punishments they have that are far too harsh on marijuana use, and I don't want to keep sounding like I'm condoning marijuana use. I don't smoke or anything like that, but they've just really put themselves in a bind by their priorities not really being in line. For the longest time, they wanted to nip, you know, smoking and all that stuff in the bud and get the marijuana thing out of the NFL, to where they were so harsh on that, they're completely blindsided by the fact that half the league likes to beat up women. And now they're like, well, crap, we have to start punishing people for this, and it has to be harsher than our drug policy, our the consequences for using drugs. It has to be.
And people forget about what happened. A lot of people forget what happened with Ben Roethlisberger several years ago, what supposedly happened in the bathroom of a bar. People forget what happened there.
Keep going down the list. It's laughable.
And Ray Lewis,
got away with murder?
Everybody loves him, some Ray Lewis. And while he was one of the greatest linebackers ever, he probably had, if he didn't pull the trigger, he was with somebody that did. And outside of, what was that? Was that Atlanta? That happened in Atlanta or somewhere?
You know who probably feels screwed? Well, RIP, I guess. But you know who probably, before he passed away, felt screwed? Aaron Hernandez. I mean, hell, everybody else is getting away with everything.
I don't know.
He's the only one that gets popped. Everybody looks at him like, oh, my God, I can't believe this monster was in the NFL. He murdered people. Well, hell, we had murderers in the NFL still that got to play. Hell, Ray Lewis won a Super Bowl after he murdered someone.
O.J. Simpson just got paroled.
And here we're talking about Ezekiel Elliott and his 6-game suspension that he'll be facing. Possibly. I think that they went with that 6-game. So just to kind of get that message out there, I think it'll be knocked down to 4. But here are their first 6 games. They have a bye week 6. But they played the Giants week 1, the Broncos week 2, the Cardinals week 3, the Rams week 4, and the Packers in week 5. So they got a great offense week 5 that they're playing against, and some pretty stout defenses the rest of the way. So they're really going to need Zeke, and it's a wake-up call. And I like it. And I mainly like it because of what Zeke's done since the investigation started. He's just, he's kind of been a punk.
And I think that, like I said, I have not condoned anything. I'm not condoning anything he's done. I think you're right. He has been a punk since, you know, all this investigation started. Hasn't done anything to help him. I think where my frustration comes in as a Dallas Cowboys fan is just the way the NFL has handled everything with such inconsistency, and it just so happens that they decide to make probably what will in the foreseeable future be the correct decision out on one of the best players on my favorite team. And that's just being a fan, an upset fan, and I'm not, like I said, not condoning anything. And the frustration and the anger comes against the NFL and just their inconsistency through the years over all these terrible situations that have happened.
Absolutely. I can understand that completely. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I mean, there's sore losers, and then there's the ex-quarterbacks at Alabama. And we'll get into that next. This is the Tony Mack and the Triplett Show, Week 2, still on the air. Right after this, Sports Radio 730, 1039, The Ump.
Sports Radio 730, 1039, The Ump. The Ump. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I thought to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I thought to bag it up.
I like the way you work it. No diggity. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplett. I like the way you work it. You can follow us on Twitter at Tony Mack Triplett. Or you can follow me, at TonyMackUMP, or you can follow Aaron. Aaron, you changed your Twitter handle last week. It's ATripTennis, right?
ATripTennis, all one word, all lowercase, so very simple.
Good, good. So ATripTennis, all lowercase, all one word. Give him a follow. Let him know. Let us know what you think so far. What's your take? Do you think Zeke got enough games? Do you think we're going to knock down to four? The inconsistency of the NFL and their punishment system. Just tell us what you think. And we're going to tell you what we think about this whole Cooper Bateman, Blake Barnett deal we got going on. And I'm going to tell you right now, Aaron, I don't know which side you're going to be on. I have an idea. But I'm gonna side with the guy who didn't leave his program in the middle of the season. I'm gonna go Saban here. Saban's never come off to me. Just look at the way he treats the media. He's always a straightforward guy. He's the first guy to tell you what he thinks, and that's straight to the media. So as far as a football player is concerned, I'm fairly certain that everybody knew what it was. And what I think it was is going into that USC game, apparently Blake Barnett was the guy. And he says, once Jalen went in, I was expecting it, but then he went out on the next series, the next series, and the next series. I don't know if everything was communicated correctly. According to Barnett, he thought he was the guy. He thought that the USC game was going to be his. Hurts was going to get a chance to go out there and do some things and show Saban what he has against live competition. And then, you know, Barnett, I guess, expected that his play was better and that he was going to be the guy. I think that Saban told everybody that this is pretty much, you know, show me what you got. Everybody's going to get a shot in this game. Show me what you got in this game, and we'll go from there. But according to Barnett, Barnett thinks he was the guy, and he was going to be the guy no matter what Jalen Hurts went out there and did. And Jalen Hurts' first play ever was a fumble. And I think a lot of people look back after the season he had, the reigning SEC MVP. They can look back on that and laugh. What are your thoughts on this, Aaron? How big of a miscommunication do you think this was? Because I just think they got their hopes up a little too high. I don't think Nick Saban, for some reason, it doesn't jump off the page to me that Nick Saban will come up and be like, hey, you're the guy.
Yeah, and I don't think he wants, I mean, with their quarterback, with their quarterback issues, I mean, Alabama really, it's they question, you know, and there's every year because they seem to be recycling quarterbacks. This year they're actually going to be returning a starter in Jalen Hurts. But I think last year, you know, nobody really knew who was going to be the starter until Barnett walked out there. I think people had their suspicions of who was going to be. Nobody really expected Hurts to play. I think a lot of people were calling for him because of just his pure athleticism. But I think that I'm going to side with Nick Saban too. But I think that it was his intention to play Jalen Hurts the whole time, because he went in after one possession that Barnett was in there. He went in, and he never came out until they were up by 50 points, and then the other ones went back in for some mop up duty. I think that was his intention. I don't think he wanted to name him the starter because I didn't know because he didn't want to name the true freshman a starter at Alabama. And then I think an issue with Barnett, especially, and this just goes, this is not just Blake Barnett. This is college football in general. There's a pandemic of, transferring has become a problem in college football, especially at the quarterback position where it's become where everybody's a daddy's boy, and they're, if I don't play now, then I'm going to go somewhere else that I can and that I will play or that I have a chance to play. And, because
yeah, go ahead.
And because nobody sits and waits their turn anymore. I don't even remember the last quarterback who sat and waited their turn to play play for 1 year as a senior. I'm trying to think back and remember who, if the last person to do that. And I'm,
to do what now?
To sit and wait your turn and play 1 year as a senior.
Blake Sims.
Blake Sims, yeah.
He was a fifth-year senior.
He was a fifth-year senior. Blake Sims was one of them. And he had a really good year that year. They went to the playoff. There's some, you heard about it a lot. It was more common back in the mid-2000s. Clemson had a guy, Will Proctor. No, that's a name nobody will remember but me. But he waited behind Charlie Whitehurst at Clemson. I mean, he had a really good season. But I can't really put my finger on any guys who waited their turn, and then if you don't play, you transfer, and it's an issue. It's really is a problem because everybody's doing it. I think it's bad for the game.
Why is it such a problem?
Because I feel like it's just such. It just shows a real selfish attitude. I mean, I understand. I would want to play too. But it's showing that there's an I. People think there's an I in team.
Announcing. Excuse me. Announcing, sorry guys, we're having to switch back and forth the mics. The mic that Cole Kubelik usually uses is crapping out pretty good on us right now. But the reason why I have such an issue with the transfer, this one in particular, is the time of the season he did it. Normally, if you're not going to get playing time, I understand that. I mean, it's starting to look like 1 year, especially as a senior, is not going to be enough if you have hopes for the NFL. You know what I mean? You want to get out there. And a lot of these guys are, you know, 4 or 5-star guys that want to transfer. They're used to playing. And if you want to transfer after a season and go find somewhere that you can get better playing time, that's fine. I understand that because in this instance, you're behind a true freshman who's going to be there for at least another 2 years. You know that. And then you have Tua coming in. You know, another guy who's a lot more athletic than you. So I get that. But to announce you're transferring in the middle of the season? Who does that benefit? That benefits nobody. That doesn't benefit you at all. You can stay there and work out with that team, be there for your teammates, be a good teammate, try to be a leader at least. When Trevor Knight got beat out of the job at Oklahoma after his... He has a Sugar Bowl victory against Alabama, has a very mediocre season as the starting quarterback for an entire season. Baker Mayfield comes in and beats him out of the job. Trevor Knight didn't transfer in the middle of the season. He didn't mail it in. He was the best leader on that freaking team, on that sideline. After every single touchdown that the guy that beat him out of the job for made, after every touchdown pass, touchdown run, the first person out there onto the field from that sideline to congratulate him with a big smile on his face was Trevor Knight. After Josh Dobbs threw that pick in double overtime against Oklahoma to seal Oklahoma's victory after coming back from 17-0, the first person to console Josh Dobbs and say, "Hey man, I understand what you're going through," was Trevor Knight. That's a leader. If you're getting beat out for the job, it's not enough to just have talent anymore. You've got to be a leader and a teammate. That should have always been the case. I feel like it always has been. I mean, you're not going to skate by. These young kids, they expect to skate by on their talent because now, even more so than ever, that's what you're told, especially going into the SEC. If you're good enough to play in the SEC, you can make it. It's all about what you can do. Talent, talent, talent. Be a leader and a teammate. And I feel like these two in particular are lacking that tremendously.
Well, I know for a fact... Well, the reason that Barnett decided to transfer midseason was so he didn't have to sit out this year.
Yeah.
Because he went in, because now he's at Arizona State. But somebody who, now we were thinking, talking about quarterbacks who transfer when they're not going to get playing time. A guy who I have a lot of respect for and who I know has a lot of respect for, at least by his teammates, was Sean McGuire from Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
Guy was James, if you don't know, he was Jameis Winston's backup. He played in that game against Clemson back when Jameis got suspended for a game. and he won the game against Clemson in overtime. It was expected to be his job going into last year, and he got beat out by DeAndre Francois. And what did he do? He stuck around. He was a team leader on the bench. He was Francois's biggest supporter. He came in when he would get hurt.
He was going to lose the job anyway, but he did get hurt at the beginning of the season last year, I believe. But he was going to lose that job to Francois.
He did start hurt, but he did come in later in the season and play some when they needed him to. But he stuck around, and that's somebody with a really good attitude and a really good team player that you just kind of have to respect. Guys who bail on the team in the middle of the season. I know that he wanted to not have to sit out a year, but that's really selfish, in my opinion. At least Cooper Bateman waited until the end of the season, and at least in defense of Cooper Bateman, he's going into his senior year, so he wasn't going to have to sit out a year. And I'm a little bit more lenient, I guess, to the guys who are going to grad transfer, but yep. The guys who transfer, you know, some guys play for, you know, three schools, and it's just kind of ridiculous now.
Well, yeah, that's fair. And the one thing I factor into all this, excuse me, is you unless you've been recruited, which I obviously haven't, you don't really know what they're promised. You know what these guys are saying. They'll say anything to get these talents over there. You know what I mean? You're going to get this amount of playing time. I can see you doing this. You can be the starter. So to that degree, I can understand maybe what they were promised in their recruitment hasn't been fulfilled like they said it would be. Maybe, you know, something happened. A guy come in like Jalen Hurts and that you didn't know about. I understand all that, so that's why I'm totally okay with transferring. Transferring doesn't bother me one bit, as long as you wait till the season's over. You know, be the best teammate you can be. That's my biggest and only complaint here. Like, if you wait till the end of the season, grad transfers especially, I'm totally okay with. But if you wait till the end of the season, then I have no problem with you transferring. Now it'd be a little different, like. If it was you were transferring because Nick Saban's ugly, or, you know, or something like that, but if it's something like the situation at Alabama where a true freshman came in and beat me out of my position, I'm not necessarily playing sour grapes about it. I'm being realistic. I'm trying to be a realist here. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get any playing time here. At least two more years, Jalen Hurts is about to be the guy. And then if I waited till the end of the year, I'm like, okay, let me see who's coming in. Which you have Tua coming in, and weigh my transfer options. I'm not going to transfer in the middle of the season, but if I see Tua's coming in too, I'm like, well, I got to get the hell out of here. Are you kidding me? I'll never see the field at Alabama. I understand that, and I'm totally okay with that.
And I'm not saying that I hate transferring. I'm just thinking that the way he did it right there,
awful.
And I understand why
awful.
It was bad. And I think that transferring in general is becoming like a problem because it's just happening everywhere, and you see it everywhere. People are leaving, you know, just because they're not going to get playing time. And I understand looking out for yourself because, you want to be a team player. But, I mean, I'm going to look out for me, too.
Absolutely.
If I'm playing, I'm going to look out for what's best for me. And I know that some of these guys are doing that. And I understand, like, you see, I mean, Auburn's got a transfer quarterback this year, Stidham. Art Briles got fired at Baylor. He wanted to play for Art Briles, so he decides, you know, I'm going to transfer because of a coach. Cam Newton came in because he got kicked out of Florida. I mean, he basically did, regardless of if you believe he stole the laptops or not. And everybody knows how I feel about Cam Newton. So, anyway, transfers happen for different reasons, but the way that Barnett, especially Blake Barnett, went about doing his was really selfish, in my opinion. But you're right, I don't really have a problem with transferring, but I do think it happens too much. I do think that if two guys are competing for a job, I think it was, I want to say it was two guys at Mississippi State, the guy who lost the job to Fitzgerald, he decided to transfer right out. They were battling off in the offseason before last season, and he got beat out and then decided, oh, I'm going to transfer.
I'll tell you the reason I like it so much. And it's mainly because I'm a fan of a program outside the SEC. Obviously, the SEC, and I'm okay with this, but the SEC obviously gets the majority of the top-tier talent. It's dispersed throughout the SEC first, and then, you know, the Clemsons, the Florida States, and the Ohio States get the rest. I love seeing that talent go elsewhere. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be selfish. I'm just saying I like to see it dispersed. I like to see some parity out there. You know what I mean? And there for a while, we had the SEC beating up on the SEC, and they were – I think Arkansas had only had two losses in 2011, and they were both like 30-point blowouts to Alabama and LSU, and they were still ranked the number three team in the country because the SEC was just that much better than everybody else. Now, I'm not saying it's strictly because of transfers. There's a lot of other things going on, a lot of coaching talent is distributed very evenly as well. I just like that there's finally more parity, and that has to do with like big key guys, like talented quarterbacks going somewhere and automatically making other schools better. I like that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And of course, I mean, you got Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma transfer, and but he had a legitimate gripe when he left Texas Tech, like they didn't want to put him on scholarship. That's a legitimate gripe, and I agree. I think that that's a reason that would have been a reason to leave as well, but. I mean, I think that guys are too quick to – I would say this. People are too quick to transfer, especially at the quarterback position when they see that when, oh, we are battling – like the Mississippi State, battling out in the offseason, I get beat out, and I'm going to transfer. But if in reality, you're one rolled ankle away from getting your shot, and that's your chance at the school that you pick. So that's another way to look at it. A lot of people don't like to think of it that way. Look at Dak Prescott. Almost every one of his big opportunities in his life, if you go back and look and read some of the stuff, has come from injuries. From his high school team to Mississippi State, now to Dallas, where he's a star and has the second highest selling jersey in the NFL next to the great Tom Brady. I mean, all of it happened because of injuries. So sometimes that happens and you get lucky. So some people, I mean, a lot of it, I mean, not like you don't want to wish somebody to get hurt, but if it does happen, then you have your chance. I think people are just too quick to transfer nowadays.
Yeah, and that patience you're talking about there, and not being too quick to transfer is honestly what can separate you. There's talent everywhere right now in football, but it's more than that with certain players, and you see that. Like Deshaun Watson, I'm not saying he had to wait for the job or anything, but Deshaun Watson, people like that, Dak Prescott, Baker Mayfield, you can tell that they're in a different place mentally. It's not just a talent thing. Baker Mayfield wasn't really recruited anywhere, but what I mean is he's obviously talented, but it's more than just a talent thing. I would take Baker Mayfield 100 times before I would take somebody like Blake Barnett. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to set you up for the second hour of Tony Mack and the Triplet. We got another really good thing coming up at the top of the hour, but we got a surprise coming up in this next segment, so stay tuned. And have fun with that. This is Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump.
730 and 103.9, The Ump. More sports.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet. That's right. Week two, we're still on the air. Aaron, tell them how they can get a hold of us on Twitter.
Yes, feel free. Please follow us on Twitter at Tony Mack Triplet. Or you can follow Antonio at Tony Mack UMP, or you can follow me at A Trip Tennis. Tweet at us. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about what we've said. If you've got any more thoughts or anything like that, just let us know.
Here we go with the surprise here.
Hello.
Happy birthday!
Thank you.
Everybody, the Mack fiance. It's Jennifer Sewell. Baby, tell them hi.
Hey, guys.
Say hi to Aaron.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Jen.
Happy birthday. How does it feel to be a grandma?
Well,
you're on the radio, so don't cuss at me.
I'm not going to.
Everybody, this is the lovely Jennifer Sewell, as Tom calls her, the Mack fiance. Lucky enough to have said yes to me about a year and a half ago almost. Baby, happy birthday. I wanted to tell you live on the radio so you can't get mad at me. I love you, sweetheart. I can't wait to see you later.
Thanks. I love you too, baby.
Bye, baby. 24! 24 years old, Aaron. Are you 24 yet?
Yes, I turned 24 in May.
You're getting old, too.
How old are you?
Are
you about to celebrate your 40th birthday now?
I don't want to hear it.
Over the hill,
I'll be 26 in December. And then, like Jen said yesterday, I'm just going to start going backwards after that. She said last night, I got home around midnight from my other job, and I told her, I said, here in about an hour you'll be old, or here in like 30 minutes you're about to be old. And she said, no, I'm going backwards. I said, well, that's going to be really weird because by the time I'm 40, you're technically be 9 years old. And that's not going to look good on me. I said, you'll be a good looking 9 year old, but now we're getting texts. I don't know how far the app behind is. Apparently it's not that far behind because your brother is already texting us and saying, oh, Jen on the radio. If you guys don't know, I don't expect a lot of you to know my fiance, but she is one of the sweetest people there is. As you can tell, her little tender voice. I joke for her not to cuss at me and everything. She wouldn't raise a hand at a fly. So happy birthday to her. You know, Aaron, like you mentioned, you just turned 24 in May. You just got married in June. You're about to own a house. You just got a teaching job outside of college. You're coaching men's basketball, ninth grade, and tennis. Man, congratulations. You're more of a grown-up than me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, actually. You know, went to work all this week.
That's a big year, man. That's
a big year. I know, a lot of stuff happening all at once, and I still kind of feel like a kid. it's just a bizarre feeling, but
you know, I feel like that very rarely, but at my other job I literally work with high schoolers, so I feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, went to work all this week. I came me and my brother hung out last night, and we were playing video games, and we were playing NHL, and we played it till about 1 o'clock in the morning. I think it was about 12:30 when we stopped, and we were going crazy, score goal, yeah, all this stuff, and then now I'm just thinking I'm an employed member of the middle class.
You're teaching the youth of America right now.
Middle class of America, but
you're teaching our youth.
Very blessed, though. Very blessed. Happy to be able to do this, and blessed where I'm at right now. Very thankful.
As another grown-up, I can tell you that there's nothing to be ashamed about. I've been on my own since I was 19. I put myself through school, having to pay for a place to live and to pay for school. So I understand what it means to work your butt off, but also still enjoy being in your 20s, man. When I go home, sometimes when Jen's already asleep and I get home late, man, I sit there in the I put a chair in the middle of my living room. I'll get down to my underwear and play PlayStation until 2 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing wrong with that. Hey, we're getting to the point where I guess video games were associated with kids, you know, growing up. You know, kids play video games to fill their time and everything else, but there's nothing wrong with an adult enjoying a video game. Rocket League is like my favorite thing on the planet right now, and I'll play that until 2 in the morning, and I still get up, handle business, I get my bills paid, and, you know, I'm climbing the ladder here, so there's nothing wrong with that. Speaking of climbing the ladder, we are getting closer and closer to the end of show number 2. We'll be back at the top of the hour for the second and final hour of Tony Mack and the Triplet. We'll give you some overrated and underrated college coaches. Next, Sports Radio 730 1039 The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams. And talking about whatever the hell they want. Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplet.
That's right. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet, hour number 2. And guys, we're just going to jump right into it. Aaron, you and I discussed yesterday, and I can already tell this is going to be fun because where we stand on some of these things. Earlier this week, Barrett Slee wrote about it in CBS. I think AL.com put it out as well. Took a poll with some anonymous coaches. A lot of anonymous heroes out there this week. I don't know if you heard, but even an anonymous guy called Tennessee's juniors soft. You can say a lot anonymously, and one of the stupidest things you can say, anonymously or not, is that Nick Saban is overrated as a coach. Now, if you're not sure what I'm talking about, one, where have you been this week? And two, anonymous coaches, I don't think it was very many, but anonymous coaches were asked who you thought is the most overrated and the most underrated coaches, and 13% Number one was Jim Harbaugh, overrated. Chose not, 48% chose not to answer, so that's what I'm saying is we didn't get a really great sample size. We can't tell you who these guys are. But Jim Harbaugh was rated the most overrated, 13%. Number two, three-way tie at 9%. You got Lovie Smith of Illinois, which I really wouldn't say he's overrated because nobody really talks about him.
And nobody, and Illinois is kind of irrelevant. Nobody really knows. The only thing people know about Lovie Smith is what he did in the NFL. And he was a below-average coach in the NFL. He wasn't great. He went to a Super Bowl with the Bears. But I don't even know why he's on this list, to be totally honest with you.
Right. And Lane Kiffin at 9%, which Lane Kiffin's talked about a lot. But I don't think he's ever been talked about as a great head coach. He was a great offensive coordinator. I don't think you can overrate that at all. Look at what he did with some of those quarterbacks. Took Jake Coker to a championship. Took Blake Sims, who was a fifth-year senior, was a running back at one point, I think, to the playoff. You know what I mean? He's a great offensive coordinator. And then Nick Saban is tied with Lane Kiffin and Lovie Smith. Now, are you kidding me? He's been there since 2007. I don't think he's won less than 10 games since that one season. He's won the conference however many times. You kind of lose count.
I think he's five.
He's won three in a row, right?
He's won three in a row, and then he won one in 2009 and 2012. So
five.
Yeah.
He's won five national championships, four since he's been at Bama. The hell is overrated? He's probably the greatest coach ever. And if you don't think he's the greatest coach ever, and that's your argument for saying he's overrated, then I'm sorry, you're wrong. It might be an opinion, but it's the wrong opinion. What do you think Nick Saban's overrated? You're an Auburn fan. Do you think Nick Saban's overrated?
Absolutely not. I think this is ridiculous. I think this is partially just people being sick of Alabama, people being sick of Nick Saban, and I'm as sick of Alabama and as sick of Nick Saban as much as anybody there is, but to just say that is just out of spite it's stupid. Like, it's ridiculous, yes, but it's just stupid. It's not even logical to say that.
If you scroll down there, I think there's some quotes on this story about why, and if I remember correctly, reading it earlier this week, oh, here we go. Overrated. Nick Saban. Nick's got a lot of advantages. In my conference, you could take five or six of us and get there a month before the season and win 12 games. There is a little effing machine underneath the stadium, and they just grow them there. Another one says, we're going to have a war. You're going to have a howitzer, and I have a musket. And then every time we'll say that you're brilliant. Okay, so you're saying that he has better talent than you, so that's why he's a better coach. Well, because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him. There's a reason that he gets the good talent and you don't. He's proven something. He's proven that he's better than you in some way. He's got a better staff. Well, guess what? He went out and hired that staff.
Great recruits want to play at Alabama because it's one of the pipelines to the NFL. Right now, really, in today's college football, they're, at least for the past 5 years, and really for the past and two of these teams, especially for the past, you know, 10 years or so, there's three pipelines to the NFL. One is Alabama, obviously. The other one is Ohio State. And the other one's LSU. Regardless of what you think about Les Miles and LSU, I know he's not the coach anymore, but while he was there, all he did was churn out NFL talent year after year. It was a pipeline to the NFL. So those three, that's why people want to play for Alabama. It's because it's a pipeline to the NFL.
They want to play for – that's why you see some of these teams and conferences dominate because of the NFL talent that comes out of there. Like you mentioned, Les Miles used to do it. Alabama and Nick Saban do it. People want to play for Urban Meyer because he dishes it out as well.
Florida State is another one of those turning out NFL talent year after year.
Jim Harbaugh went to three straight AFC championships as a head coach in the NFL, so people understand that he has a grasp of what it takes to make it in the NFL, so people want to play for them. So get better as a coach. Don't say that Nick Saban's overrated. And underrated, on the underrated side, 24% said that Bill Snyder of Kansas State was underrated, which I really don't feel like he's underrated. If you ever brought up, hey, what do you think of Bill Snyder? Somebody would be like, he's a really good coach. He's a legendary coach. I don't think, you know what I mean? He's not one of the greatest ever, but he gets a lot of respect. I just don't think you hear people, you know, bring him up out of the blue as much. But I wouldn't say he's underrated, because I don't think there's anybody out there that says, yeah, Bill Snyder sucks.
Yeah, Bill Snyder, Chris Peterson was 15% on this list. I think Chris Peterson is definitely one of the more underrated, because he hasn't gone to any big-name schools, but everywhere that he's been, he's made an impact. And Bill Snyder, if you look at Kansas State, he's been there for so many years. Before he got to Kansas State, they were nothing. They were terrible, a trash can of a program. He took over. They turned him into a winning program. They won the Big 12 back when it had 12 teams and was very competitive when Bob Stoops was at his peak at Oklahoma early. Kansas State had a really good team under Snyder. And then when Bill Snyder retired for the first time, they were awful. They went back to being terrible. And they begged him to come back, and he came back, and he immediately turned them around. You know, Kansas State is going to do what they do every year. They're going to win 9 games. They're going to have a gritty – they're going to play gritty football. They're going to beat one team that they shouldn't beat during the season probably. And, I mean, they're just a solid team. And I think that nobody else could really go out in the middle of nowhere Kansas at Kansas State and win football games like Bill Snyder. So I think he's extremely, extremely underrated.
And you mentioned some of those Mike again. Oh, there it comes. Here it comes. See what I mean? See what we're dealing with here today? Mike cutting in and out.
We just can't escape the technical difficulties.
it's okay. It'll get worked out. But Bill Snyder, like you mentioned, some of those wins he had when Bob in the early reign of Bob Stoops at Oklahoma, 2003, right before Oklahoma went to a national championship in the Big 12 championship, K-State whooped the fire out of Oklahoma, 35-7. 2012, you mentioned they begged him to come back. They had a magical run, and I think they ended up losing 2 games that year, 1 to Baylor in a blowout, 1 to Oregon in a blowout. The only game I've ever been to in Norman, Oklahoma, K-State beat Oklahoma in Norman. And if you remember the Bob Stoops era as well as I do, they did not lose at home. You could not beat Oklahoma in Norman. Through that point in his career. So Bill Snyder has done a lot of great things. And I think people, the reason why he's not underrated, people recognize those things. And they don't put this unrealistic cap on his career. That his career is what it is, and people realize that. And another person on the list is Chris Peterson, underrated. 15%. I can absolutely stand behind that. And I've always respected Chris Peterson as a coach, but I was one of those people who, when Washington was picked in the preseason last year to be a playoff team,
we laughed at it. Yeah. We laughed it.
We were waiting for that opportunity for them to finally get beat. And we picked a couple times last year them to get beat until we finally just conceded the fact that they were going to win and make it to the playoff.
But I think we both picked USC. Did we both? I think we both picked USC to beat.
We might have
Washington, but I was picking against them in all season. And see, when, like, I think I mentioned it last week, when I predict a team that I think is a joke in the top 25 to do poorly, it's nothing against them, but I want to be right. So I find myself rooting against them all season. So I rooted against Washington all year. And they never faltered until they got beat by USC and it making the playoffs. So
exactly. And what else of a coach do you need before you start giving him credit? He took a program I promise you had never heard of, especially if you're my age, Boise State. He won 2 Fiesta Bowls there before he left to Washington, and in 3 or 4 years, he turns Washington into a playoff team. And if you remember, it hasn't even been 10 years. They went 0-12. You know what I mean? With
Jake Locker was the quarterback,
yeah,
when they went 0-12.
So I absolutely put him on my underrated list, and this is where it's going to get fun, Aaron. Before we get into the overrated portion, I'm going to let you finish that. You can finish that in a second. But after you finish that thought, I want you to give me some coaches that you find underrated in college football.
Well, that's exactly where I was going to go with my thought. So we were on the same wavelength there. This is one name that I don't see on the list, and they says 10 other coaches got 41% of the votes. But one guy I'm going to mention is Mike McIntyre. A lot of people may not know who that is, but it's Colorado's coach, and he's been the coach for a couple years now. And last year they won the Pac-12 South. They went to the Pac-12 title game. They got beat by Washington pretty good. Their starting quarterback got hurt during the game, but Colorado was one of those laughing stock teams what the bottom feeder of the Pac-12 for so many years. They were the team of that conference that everybody laughed at and got a win against. You mean it was Colorado at the Pac-12, Vanderbilt in the SEC, Kansas in the Big 12, and Rutgers in the Big 10. And I'm not real sure about the ACC. They kind of rotate between, you know, teams like Boston College and Wake Forest, teams like that. But Colorado was a laughingstock, and Mike McIntyre's come in, and they, you know, they won, I think they won 9 games last year, and had a really good season. Now, and it depends on if they're going to have any, if he's going to have any lasting power coming up in the next few years. But I think if last year was any indication, that he's an extremely underrated coach, in my opinion. So he's just one of the names on the list that I think is definitely underrated. What do you think about Mike?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. He took Colorado, and he had a good quarterback last year, but he took Colorado and took them to contend in the Pac-12 championship. Like you mentioned, a team that's been laughable for many years, especially since they left the Big 12. So I think you're spot on there. And a guy that I put on my list first would be Brian Harsin. I think a lot of people really don't give him enough credit. He's only been at Boise State 3 years. Chris Peterson left after the 2012 season, and then I think Harsin took over after like one game in the 2013 season or something like that. And then 2014, when he had the helm, he went 12-2, 1-1 against the top 25. And then he won a Fiesta Bowl that year, his first full year as the head coach of Boise State. He won a Fiesta Bowl 2015-2016. He hasn't won less than 9 games. He's 31-9 in 3 full years. Like I mentioned, I think 2013, I think he stepped in after a couple of games. So Brian Harsin would be the first one on my list, and he's continued what Chris Peterson did at Boise State. And while he might have stepped in for some of that talent, that's still kind of hard to do. You know what I mean? And because it's expected of Boise State, and he's keeping that expectation alive. Do you have any more? I have another underrated coach, but I want to get yours first because I'm also looking up something else real quick. But give me another underrated coach, and I hope it's not the next one on my list.
This one is this is not going to be a big name for anybody, but in my opinion, from what I saw last year from this team and from this coach, but Jeff Munkin, a lot of people don't know who that is. He's the head coach of Army right now, and before he went to Army, he was at Georgia Southern. And he runs, you know, he's always run that triple option because he was assistant coach of Paul Johnson, who's at Georgia Tech, who was at Navy. And Army, who has been just pitiful. And, of course, you know, the academy's different, different requirements. You know, to go there, it's difficult. They don't always get the best players, so they run the triple option, you know, because it's for more undersized teams. So he's there. He's been there for 3 years. They went 4-8 in his first year. They went 2-10. 2 years ago, but last year they went 8-5. They beat Navy for the first time in 14 years. Navy had won. They won every matchup from 2002 to 2015, and Army won it last year. And they were 8-5. They won their bowl game. So I think that says something when you take a job like that one at Army, where you're always looking to you're looking up to Navy. And it's just a place where it's extremely difficult to win. And he came out last year and won 8 games. So I think speaks a lot for what kind of person he is as a coach. I heard him after the game, after they beat Navy. Just a really upstanding guy. Not saying that he could win everywhere, but to take a job like that and do the job that he has done so far at Army has been fantastic.
The next guy I'm going to mention, and that's a good point. The next guy I'm going to mention, the accolades that he's had in his 12 years as a head coach, I believe it's 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 12 years. You're not going to believe who it is when I tell you. And you, when I tell you his name, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, he is good. He is underrated. But I want you to see if you can guess who it is. He's in his 12 years, he's 10-1 in bowl games. And I believe if I did this correctly, there are 6 coaches actively, 6 active college football coaches that have beaten Nick Saban since he's been at Alabama. This guy is 10-1 in bowl games, and he's one of those six coaches. Who do you think that is? Could you tell me who that is off the top of your head?
12 years coaching.
He's been coaching for 12 years.
10-1 in bowl games.
10-1.
Hmm.
He's one of six active football coaches to have beaten Nick Saban.
Let me see if I can name the coaches that have beaten Nick Saban. Well, Urban Meyer, Gus Malzahn, Kevin Sumlin, Dabo Sweeney.
Mark Richt, I think, beat him in 07.
Yes, Mark Richt.
You're missing one.
Missing one, and it's this one, isn't it?
Yes,
goodness,
sir.
This is going to drive me nuts. I like these kind of things.
I'm going to give it away right here. Sugar Bowl. It's Kyle Whittingham.
Wow.
Utah.
Wow.
Vastly, vastly underrated. He is 10-1 in bowl games. He doesn't lose bowl games when he gets there. The only bowl game he's lost, I think it was his first or second year once they joined the Pac-12. He spent 6 years in the Mountain West and 6 years in the Pac-12. And he is, I forgot to tally this up yesterday, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. He's won, I think, 11 or 12 games against top 25 opponents. 3, 5, 7, 8, 10, 13, 16, 18. He's lost 18. He doesn't have the best record against top 25 opponents, but he wins bowl games when he gets there, and he's one of six active head coaches that have beaten Nick Saban. And nobody talks about him. He took over right after Urban Meyer. And he didn't thrive off success immediately. They went 7-5 and 8-5 his first 2 years, and then 07 they went 9-4, and then he turned around in 08, went 13-0 and beat Saban with his team. That was not Urban Meyer's team. That was his football team. So he's done an amazing job since he's been at Utah. He's gone into the Pac-12, but he hasn't won it yet, but he has competed very well in the Pac-12. He's beaten Jim Harbaugh. He beat Jim Harbaugh in Jim Harbaugh's first game back at Michigan. So he's competing with elite coaches, and nobody talks about him. Nobody talks about it. He hasn't taken a job anywhere else. He's been there 12 years now. I don't know how well he would fare anywhere else, but I think he's certainly deserving of a better Power 5 job. I mean, look what he's done. That's a hell of a resume.
Yeah, and I would not have guessed that. I was sitting there, and it's pretty easy to name the five coaches that have beaten Nick Saban, but that one is one you don't think about. And I remember that Utah game. Brian Johnson was the quarterback, absolutely picked apart Alabama. They got up 21-0. But yeah, and that is an impressive resume. He's one of those guys you just kind of put on your back burner, don't really think about.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Aaron, we're not as far along as we normally are, but this next part, when we get into overrated, is probably going to take a while, and I really want to dive into it. So we're going to take a break now. That way we have a longer next segment, and we're going to rank. We all know, I don't think you're going to disagree, Saban Meyer, 1 and 2, right? Easy. So we're going to debate Jim Harbaugh, Dabo Sweeney, and Jimbo Fisher, and who's overrated, where do they fit in, and rank them compared to each other. Coming up next, this is the Tony Mac and the Triplett Show right here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 at the Ump. Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplett. Some opinion overload, simple plan there. All right, we left you with some of the underrated college coaches, some of the most underrated college coaches that we thought that some of you don't even think about. We left with Kyle Whittingham and how he's 10-1 in bowl games, 105, I think. I think we said 105-50 overall, 6 years in the Mountain West, 6 years in the Pac-12, and one of six active coaches to have a win over Nick Saban. Now we're going to get into something I know Aaron and I are going to disagree on, and that's overrated coaches. And I'm going to go ahead and throw out my most overrated coach, and that is Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is overrated, and I say that loving Jim Harbaugh. When he was in San Francisco, I pulled for San Francisco so hard every year to go to and win the Super Bowl. But other than that, in college, what has he done to get the accolades that he gets, to get the praise that he gets? He is a fantastic coach. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a wonderful coach. But when you're ranking best coaches, when you say who are the best coaches in college football, until he wins something, you can't put him in that conversation. You have to say, here are the best coaches. List conference champions, national champions, and national champion contenders. And then when you say other really good coaches that are about to to be there. Then you mentioned Jim Harbaugh, but in the Pac-12, he won an Orange Bowl, but he never won his conference. He has yet to win the Big Ten, and you can say, well, he's about to enter his third year to win the Big Ten. He's got a chance, whatever. Good luck, because he has, like, what, one or two players returning on the defense. William Spate is his starting quarterback. He lost his top three targets last year, and they opened the season with a very stout defense in Florida. No matter what they lost, they're going to have a tough defense, and I believe they found a quarterback. So he's going to start the season off tough, and in his third year, James Franklin won the Big Ten, okay? And Jim Harbaugh has been a college coach. He coached San Diego. I don't have that down here. I don't have his stuff at San Diego. When he got to Stanford, he flipped Stanford around and turned them into a winning program. Don't get me wrong. I respect that, and I get that, and he's a fantastic coach for that. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm saying he's overrated. His overall record since Stanford, from 07 to 2016, 49-27. He's 10-12. Against the Pac-12, and he can't beat Ohio State. He cannot beat Urban Meyer, something James Franklin has already done, something Dabo Swinney has done twice since 2013, in the 2013 season, 2014 bowl season. So what, three seasons? Three seasons Dabo Swinney's already beaten Urban Meyer twice. And
this Urban Meyer's only lost about, I think, six games since he's been at Ohio State, yeah. And Dabo Swinney's two of them.
And Mark D'Antonio's two of them. So, absolutely, number one, in my opinion, Jim Harbaugh is absolutely over. With all the praise that he gets, he hasn't done anything.
And, well, I'm going to disagree a little. I don't think Jim Harbaugh's overrated. I think that this year we'll find out a lot about Michigan because they lost so much talent on both sides of the ball. I think it's going to be difficult for him, but if Jim Harbaugh is as good a coach as a lot of people think he is and that I think he is, he'll bounce back and have a great season. I'm not going to say that he's the most overrated coach like this list says, and like you agree, you seem to agree with this list with
absolutely.
Jim Harbaugh at the top.
Absolutely.
And I don't think he is the most overrated. I think he got a lot of premature praise, but I feel like it was worth it because of the state that Michigan was in and the mess, the disaster that it was in when the Brady Hoke experiment that was a disaster. And of course Brady Hoke made an Orange Bowl in his first season, but that's
okay.
proof of people want my theory about new head coaches, but they were awful. They were, what, 3-9, and then Harbaugh came in, and they had a great season his first year, had a really good season last year. I don't think he's overrated. I do think that – I don't know. I'm kind of like – I don't think he's overrated. I don't think he's under – I think he's just a good coach. I think he's one of the best coaches that college football has, but they don't have – there's not many great coaches in college football, for one thing.
Well, because even if there is a lack of great coaches, it doesn't give you a default reason to throw him in there. I think you have your small group of great elite coaches, and he's right on the outside. Everybody wants to put him in there so much because he's got the great personality, and he's almost been there so many times. But he has, in my opinion, he has to do something to get there. He hasn't done anything. He's beaten Florida once, which is good. He won an Orange Bowl at Stanford, which is good. And you comparing him to Brady Hoke is just kind of misleading, because you're comparing what he did at Michigan after the dumpster fire that was Brady Hoke. Brady Hoke went to Oregon as a defensive coordinator for 1 year last year, and look what that defense did. That defense was the worst in college football. Brady Hoke is a disaster. So you're comparing an absolute disaster to a really good coach, an almost elite coach. So I'm trying to give him praise, which he's deserving of. It's just he gets too much because he's thrown up there with the elite coaches. Dabo Swinney, Jimbo Fisher, both won national championships, won their conference several times. I can't put Jim Harbaugh up there with those guys. I think they have a big space, a big paragraph gap in between those two, in between Dabo and Jimbo and Jim Harbaugh, until Jim Harbaugh wins his division, first of all, and then wins his conference and is competing for a national championship. They had a 10-win season in Michigan his first year there. That's great. And if they win nine games this year with all that they lost and the fact that they have William Spate as their quarterback,
I will be impressed. I'm not trying to say that he's overrated by saying, well, he's not that good. He's misleading everybody. He just hasn't won anything like elite coaches have. It's a shame to say, well, yeah, but he did turn Stanford around. So I put him up there. I'll put him up there with those guys just because you like him. You're falling into his likability, which he is very likable. But until he does something that some of these other coaches have done, think about what these guys have done. Jimbo Fisher has been the head coach of Florida State since 2010. He is 78-17, 17-12 against the top 25, 5-2 in bowl games. He's beaten Dabo Swinney 4 out of 7 times. He's 4-7 against Dabo and Clemson. There's 4-3, I'm sorry, 4 out of 7 times. He's 4-3. And he's won the ACC, what, 2 or 3 times, 3 times at least, won a national championship once. Dabo Swinney is 85-25 in his, he's been there 1 year, he's been a head coach at Clemson 1 year longer than Jimbo's been at Florida State. He's been a head coach at Clemson since 2009. He's 85-25, 18-16 against the top 25. He's won his division 4 times, he's won at least 4 times, he's won the ACC 3 times at least, he's won a national championship. 3 conference championships and a national championship apiece for Jimbo and Dabo. And you're saying that Jim Harbaugh's up there with these guys? It's a joke when you're comparing him to those guys when they've done so much and he's getting that praise just because he's likable and staying the night in recruits' bedrooms. And I've met Jim Harbaugh. I met him last November at Texas Roadhouse. He's an awesome guy. He's a fantastic football coach, but he's not up there on those guys' levels yet. I'm sorry. He's just not.
I don't think he is either. I think that really there's 2 great coaches in college football, and it's Urban Meyer and Nick Saban. And, I mean, 5 national championships for Nick Saban, 3 for Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's only lost like 6 games at Ohio State. Nick Saban's only lost like 13 in Alabama or something like that. So those 2 guys are easily the 2 best coaches in college football. And then I think you got like about the next tier. I think Dabo Swinney, after what he did what he's done the last 2 years especially, and we'll see what he can do with no Deshaun Watson, because they lost a lot of players, but I think they'll be just fine and if he's a great coach like I think he is, then they'll be just fine. He's kind of in that next tier, I think, kind of by himself because of his accomplishments so far. And then right under him, I think, is Jimbo Fisher and Jim Harbaugh. Maybe Jim Harbaugh after Jimbo Fisher, just because Fisher's got the 1 national championship.
So you put Dabo above Jimbo?
Yeah, I think that Dabo Swinney is miles better than Fisher.
I'm going to disagree, but I think they're really close. The last 2 years, Dabo's gotten the best of Jimbo in really good games, and he's had one of the best college quarterbacks we've ever seen play. Dabo's not shy of putting out good NFL talent. I mean, he's put out Deshaun Watson, who I think is going to fare very well. He's put out Sammy Watkins. He's put out DeAndre Hopkins. He's putting out great guys, and so is Jimbo. But until these last 2 years, he's had arguably one of the top 10 greatest quarterbacks we've seen in mine and yours generation. Take those 2 years away, Fisher's 4-1 against Dabo. Fisher has owned Dabo Swinney, and the last 2 years have been fairly close. Remember when Dabo Swinney was undefeated and Clemson was getting ready to march to the national championship after beating LSU in a bowl game and then turn around and beating Georgia at the very beginning of the season? They went into Florida State, or Florida State came to Clemson and whooped them like 70-3 or something crazy. It was ugly. It wasn't that bad, but it was ugly. They whooped them so badly. So the last 2 years, Dabo has gotten the best of Jimbo to bring it back and make it look respectable. Like I said, he's Jimbo's 4-3 against Dabo Swinney. So I'm going to give him the edge there. Dabo has beaten Nick Saban. Dabo has been very successful as of late against the SEC, but Dabo's Achilles heel early, before he started competing for those national championships, was not only Jimbo Fisher, but Steve Spurrier. He couldn't beat South Carolina at the end of the year. I think they beat him, 3 or 4 years in a row. He just couldn't top him.
Mm-hmm.
Jimbo Fisher has yet to beat Nick Saban. He gets a chance to beat him this year at the beginning of the season. But he's got the edge on Dabo Swinney, in my opinion. But they're really close, so I'm not faulting you for putting Jimbo or Dabo above Jimbo, but I'm putting Jimbo above Dabo. I think it's really close. I think it's a lot closer than you say it is. You said it was a big gap.
Well, I just think I don't know. I just think that I think the ACC has gotten better, and Clemson has kind of been the best team, at least the last 2 years. And it's probably just because I don't think that Jimbo – I don't know. I just don't get this – I get this vibe from Jimbo Fisher that he's not a – I think he's a great recruiter. But I just don't think he's a great coach. I think he's a good coach. I don't think he's I think Dabo Swinney's a better coach. And I also feel like Dabo Swinney is at the team where it's harder to win. I mean, Jimbo Fisher's at a big-name brand, Florida State. I mean, and Clemson's not. They're a small college town like Auburn. It's like it's a place that's difficult. I mean, it's a big team, but it's not Florida State. It's not Alabama. It's not Ohio State. It's a tougher place, and he's built a culture there, and I just think he's a better coach. But I think he's, like I said, in that second tier, and then you got Jimbo kind of in there, that same tier with him. And then outside from those two guys, I think you've got Jim Harbaugh.
Well, like I said, 7 years Jimbo's been at Florida State, so that makes 8 years at Clemson for Dabo. Dabo's 85-25. Jimbo is 78-17. Give Jimbo one more year. Give Jimbo that 2009 year at Florida State. Say Bowden retired a year before. Jimbo wins at least eight or nine games. So he'll probably have more wins. He's got a better record against the top 25. He's played in his time at Florida State, which is 1 year less than Dabo at Clemson. He's played 29 top 25 opponents. Dabo has played with 33 or 34. Dabo's 18-16. Jimbo is 17-12. And I understand what you're saying, that Jimbo doesn't have the toughest time having to rebuild after Bowden because it's Florida State. I get that. But and Dabo is at a place that it's not – he's created Clemson to be the powerhouse they are. It wasn't gifted to him when he got there, and certainly I credit him for that. And that's why he's up there. It's closer than what you give it credit for. But Jimbo – I can't discredit Jimbo for getting that job because he had been there for so long. He was a part of what Bowden did there as well because he was the coordinator there for so long as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was part of the culture.
It wasn't just like handed – it wasn't just given to him undeservingly. He didn't come in from somewhere else. Kind of like Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. He built that offense the last 2 years what it is, and Bob Stoops found him worthy enough to step down and give him the job. It's not like they pulled him out of nowhere and said, hey, here's a great team. Good luck. Same with Jimbo. You know, he was there with Bobby, and Bobby was like, well, now it's yours. You've helped me build this. You've been a part of this offense for so long. Now you get the whole thing.
I think that that has a big – sometimes I think like when Jim Harbaugh left Stanford and he turned the keys over to David Shaw, and David Shaw kept winning. And I mean, Andrew Luck was there, and I was like, there's no way this keeps up. These are Harbaugh's players, and this is Andrew Luck. And David Shaw is not a great coach. And Harbaugh's players were there for a while, and then they kept winning. They kept winning. They kept beating Oregon, which is what they kept doing every year. And Kevin Hogan's the quarterback, and he was like a fifth-year senior. And I was like, Kevin Hogan played his first year under Harbaugh. He's the last one. David Shaw's not a good coach. And then last year, of course, without Kevin Hogan, they struggled. But I finally think after about – how long's David Shaw been at Stanford? 6 or 7 years now? Maybe more than that.
I don't know if it's been more than that.
It's around 6 or 7, I would say.
2011, I think, was his first –
That was 2011. That was Harbaugh's last year, I think.
So – well – I think David Shaw was the head coach. I think he was the head coach the year that Stanford lost the Fiesta Bowl to Oklahoma State.
Yeah, that was his first year, I think.
Okay, so that was the 2011 season, 2012 bowl season, I think. So 2011 would have been his first season. So 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So 6 years. He's been there 6 years.
Yeah. And I think I finally jumped off the David Shaw is not a good coach bandwagon. But in that sense – I'm going to talk about who I think is the most overrated coach. And I've got two who I think – and I'm going to mention some honorable mentions here. One of them was Kevin Sumlin.
Like you have at Notre Dame. Appreciate
and it was Kevin Sumlin for the longest time.
We're going to take a quick break. Our last break of the show.
First year that he was at Texas A&M right when they jumped into the SEC. I was like, he's got a great player, Johnny Manziel.
Going into new, new team likes to play.
That's here on Tony Mac
team likes
and
to play
the
for a new coach.
Right here on Sports
and
Radio,
I'm convinced, of course, that year was the year that Alabama won the national championship when they beat Notre Dame. That good game against Georgia. We talked about that last week. I'm convinced if there had been an 18 playoff and Texas A&M would have gotten in, they would have won it. They were the hottest team in the country that season. But since then,
her husband,
he lived off Johnny Manziel for another year. They were a decent team with no defense
and can't take it with them.
All they've done is they go 5-0 and everybody's like, "Term life insurance company."
We represent.
They're about Kenny Hill.
Ray,
they're about to. They didn't even start 1-0 with Kenny Hill. They're like, they're going to the playoff. They're going to the playoff. Danny Cannell was one of the ones I could not stand. It was, I'm like, shut up. Like, this is not going to last.
For less than some half of the fires died down now a little bit. He's
one of the hottest. That's why he's an honorable mention, because if they were still, Kevin Sutton's a great coach. He's not. He's done. This year's his last year, in my opinion.
That's 800-350-8989.
Who I'm going on with my. It was kind of a tie. It was between Brian Kelly and Jim McElwain.
Since 1985,
I'm going to give the edge to Brian Kelly because he's been there longer.
Get full details on the example policy.
But Brian Kelly gets way too much credit. I think he's not a great person after what he said last year.
Agreed.
And he's not a good coach.
Agreed. I don't think he's that great.
We make just one razor with five German engineered blades.
He's not a good coach. I mean, he's an average coach at best. He went. If you look at his record at Notre Dame, he's 59.
By
31.
Owning the factory and cutting out the middleman, we're able to sell our high quality.
You look at his
years,
excluding 2012 and 2015.
Now we're dropping
this is
the
records
price,
he had: 8-5, 8-5, 9-4, 8-5, and 4-8 last year.
Harry's.
He went 10-3 and went to the Fiesta Bowl.
None of the extra noise.
A couple years ago in 2015, and in 2012 was when they went 12-0 and made the national championship and got embarrassed by Alabama. And that, in my opinion, that Notre Dame team. That made the national championship was the worst undefeated team I think that I had ever seen. They were so unimpressive all year. They didn't beat anybody. It didn't feel like they beat anybody by more than 10 points.
Were you born from 1945 to 1965? People born during these years are five times more likely to have hepatitis C. So even if you try to eat right, exercise, and take care of yourself, you could still have hepatitis C, a serious disease that's a leading cause of liver cancer. If you were born from 1945 to 65, you should get a blood test for hepatitis C. Treatments can cure this disease. Talk to your doctor about getting tested.
Jim McElwain's not going
to
last.
A message from the CDC.
But Brian Kelly's the most overrated to me. It's ridiculous that Brian Kelly still has a job.
You're bringing your daughter to her favorite pop stars concert.
Or not Jim, sorry, but Jim Harbaugh above both of them.
Isn't this fun?
As far as overrated, because he's a better coach than both of them. I'm not saying that. I don't mean that. I'm saying he's more overrated because he gets
that's
going to
be $180. We can just take a photo.
McElwain, I think people are really starting to realize the reason why he's not in the
Bowl.
People are finally starting to realize how weak that division is that he's winning. So now they're starting to critically look at him. Like you mentioned, you thought he'd be out 3 years. It's obviously going to be more than that now, but he might still be out the door. They're going to be looking at him critically to see if he can turn the offense around. And Brian Kelly is absolutely overrated. Not
there
that.
There are no perfect answers.
Pretty
but
much
that's
a piece
okay.
Of crap of
because
a guy
you don't have
too,
to be
you know,
perfect
there,
to be a perfect
you know,
parent. Teens in foster
yelling,
care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit adoptuskids.org/al. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Adopt U.S. Kids.
How about this, Brian Kelly? When the winds are like 90 miles an hour during a football game, stop calling it the shotgun. How about that? How about you put your quarterback under center?
And then he criticized how bad Deshaun Kizer played. He's like, he's got to step up and make plays. I think he was like 8 of 30 in that game. I was like, dude, it's a monsoon. How do you expect to throw the ball in this monsoon weather? As a coach, you got to take the blame. All kinds of blame. You got to stick up for your players. But all he did was place blame on somebody else.
And there's crack being passed around that locker room because his players came out to defend him afterwards and like said that they appreciate him calling him out in public. No, you don't. No, you don't. Nobody with a college football level ego like you have in Notre Dame
really
appreciates being called
you've
out
just
public.
Taken the
but we're
going to
take a quick break, our last break of the show. When we come back, Aaron and I are going to give you our SEC West picks
or talk to your doctor.
Going into no this college football season. That's here on Tony Mac and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730 1039 The Ump. Welcome back. Last segment, Tony Mac and the Triplet. What better way to end the show, end the segment, with our SEC West picks. Last week, we picked our East teams. This week, we're going with the SEC West. I'll start it off. I'm reading off of a picture I had when I voted for SEC Media Days. I got to change up the bottom two because this was prior to the Hugh Freeze situation. So I'm going to put Ole Miss at the bottom. They're going to have a lot of firepower, offensively. But me and Aaron can go out there and score 35 points on them this year. So I'm going to put Ole Miss at 7, Mississippi State at 6, Texas A&M at 5, Arkansas at 4, LSU at 3. I got Auburn finishing 2nd in the West and Alabama at number 1. My most uncomfortable pick with that is not going to be Arkansas or A&M. It's LSU at 3 because they could very easily, you know, go 8-4 because of mediocre quarterback play. So that's the one I don't feel 100% about. I can see LSU finishing 4th, but I'm going to go Alabama, Auburn, 1-2. Aaron, who you got?
Where our lists are very similar. My last, I too have Ole Miss in 7th. I think Shea Patterson, he's going to go through some growing pains, but I think he's going to have a good season. By the end of the season, I think he will have improved a good bit, but they'd be lucky to win 5 games this year, in my opinion, with the way things have gone.
Yeah.
6, I got Texas A&M. I think this is really going to be a bad year for Texas A&M. They don't have a quarterback. They have a lot of questions everywhere. Kevin Sumlin is on the direct hot seat, so I think that they're going to have a bad year and he's going to be gone. 5, I've got Mississippi State. I think it all hinges on the season that Nick Fitzgerald has. If he has a good season, they could win as many as 8, but I'm thinking more like 7. For Mississippi State this year. Arkansas, coming in at 4th, you're going to get what you get with Arkansas. Austin Allen's going to have a gritty season. They're going to run the ball. They're going to be physical. They're going to win tough games. They're going to lose some. They're probably going to get blown out by Alabama, but it is what it is. They'll probably beat somebody they shouldn't. 3, I've got LSU, and LSU, like you said, is a wild card. I could see them finishing as high as 2nd or as low as 4th. So I got them at 3. I think it's comfortable. I think you're right about the quarterback play. And I think we'll find out a lot about Orgeron this year and see if he's going to last at LSU. Great recruiter, great motivator. We'll see if he's learned from his experiences at Ole Miss. 2, I've got Auburn. I'm not going to put them at 1. I've had them win in the West before, and not going to do it. I'm sketchy to invest in Auburn a lot, but
before you get to number 1, spoiler alert, Alabama. But did you hear? It might have been the week before this one, but the whole report about Jared Stidham throwing 2 picks in practice, one of them being a pick 6 in a scrimmage over the week.
Yes, I heard that.
Did you hear that it was not him?
No, I didn't hear that.
Turns out, I forget what player it was, but it was a player that told the reporter. That it was Jared Stidham. Turns out it was Sean White that threw those interceptions. It was not Jared Stidham. So rest your tiny little easy Auburn head. He's doing just fine. Anyways, continue. Spoiler alert, Alabama.
Just what I'm just not going to invest in Auburn. I'm going to expect them to have your typical 8-4, another type of season. And number 1, Alabama. Obviously one of my playoff teams, more than likely. Whenever we get to those, it's hard to pick against them right now with the way the rest of the West is. So obviously they're my number 1 in the West. They'll play Florida for the 3rd year and, beat the stew out of Florida for the 3rd straight year in the SEC championship.
Alabama, Florida State week 1. Who you got in Atlanta, Alabama's 2nd home stadium?
Alabama, whenever they play in Atlanta or Dallas, it's like another home game. You got to go with Alabama. It's just hard to pick against them. As good as Florida State probably is going to be this season, they could very easily go 11-1, but they're going to lose this one.
I'm going to agree with you. I've got Alabama pulling away and probably winning by double digits, a couple scores, because DeAndre Francois is very tough. It's going to take a guy like him to beat Alabama. I don't think he's going to have to be super efficient. I don't think he can go 9-27 like he did against Michigan, but he can't turn the ball over, and I don't think he's going to be a guy that does that. They need a tough guy like that, and they have a very good secondary. They got Derwin James at safety, hardest hitting safety in college football, Tavares McFadden at cornerback. That's going to be great, and you've got Jalen Hurts coming in with a lot of questions. But with the backfield that they have and the offensive line that they have, they're going to be able to run at will. The running backs are just going to beat you down through the tackles and get the hard yards with Bo Scarborough and those big-style running backs. And then Jalen Hurts is going to be able to run, too. So he's not going to have to pass to beat him. He's going to have to make some throws, but they're going to beat him running the football and just run it down their throat, beat him until they're tired. And it doesn't matter because Florida State probably going to win the ACC and meet him again in the playoff or get a chance to. Anything else you want to say before we head out? Because the music started. We got about 20 seconds. We are gone.
Great show. Always a blast.
Absolutely. Thank y'all so much for listening. If you didn't get a chance to listen to all of it, the podcast will be up momentarily. But for Aaron, I'm Tony Mack, and this is Tony Mack in the Triplet. Thank y'all so much. Sports Radio 730-1039, The Ump.